Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
So hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. My name is Tim Mitchell and I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm overjoyed to be joined once again by Martin Tardoff, who is currently in Berlin. Well, he's been in Berlin for a number of years now, right?
Well, yeah, actually, we're living close by. You know, I think after some years in the city, we're a little fed up with it. So now we live like out in the nature. We're surrounded by lakes and forests and so forth.
Oh, you're in the country, as we say.
Yeah, it's about like 30 minutes out of the city.
Cool. So it's like rural, kind of what we call rural, where it's like side roads and not off the highway kind of thing, you know?
It's like here, yeah, kind of like it's still a town per se, but like it's like spread around and everywhere surrounded by like forests, and mm-hmm. it lays on a big river and which like flows into like few lakes and so on. So it's easy to like be 10 minutes and on a beach, or you know, whenever there's sun. I mean, like, I'm not saying that there's a lot of sun in here, but whatever there's sun, like, you can be somewhere in 10 minutes. So
yeah, somewhere nice. I think it's Germany. You just will like it, right?
Yeah, that's it. Just like it or shut up.
Yeah. For sure. And so, you know, you're back on the Ray Wunderlich team writing books. So, I mean, you never really left, but your latest exploit is, you're back on the combine trail.
Kind of, but not really. Like we've just released an update to the combine book, which is the iOS 15 MacOS 12 update. There's a few new things in there that are related mostly to interoperation with the async await. But I think what I'm more excited about is working on a new book, which is the new Swift concurrency book, and it covers like async await, task groups, tasks, the new actor model, and so forth. So I find it pretty fascinating. I started like, because, okay, let me jump like.
maybe I'll throw a bit of context to I think the community is wondering, you know, with the release of Async Await, they were wondering what is happening with Combine and how it works with, you know, UIKit and Swift UI and so on and so forth. So if you could cover some of those aspects.
Right. So, you know, Combine is the, is Apple's reactive framework, so to say. Like it's similar to other reactive frameworks out there, like ArcSwift, Reactive Cocoa, and so forth. You know, this covers like a well-defined set of asynchronous tasks that you can like put together and like build like this quite complex, honestly, asynchronous workflows that, you know, have a lot of inputs that come together, being processed in a safe manner, and then like, you know, being acted upon and so forth and so forth. So it's like a very complex thing that you can do like very, very powerful things with. But underneath, like it was still based on like graph-driven dispatch and so forth. So the new Swift concurrency model addresses like this part. It's like a little lower level than Combine itself, because you know when Swift launched, you remember well, like Swift 1 in Sanford. Were we together at this WWDC? I think so, because I was with Ray, I was with Cesare.
Yeah, you know, 2020, I was at WWDC for 2014 for the announcement. I don't know where. Did we do a Ray Winterlich get together? I don't remember. I can't remember who I was sitting with, but you're right. I you and I have had many walks in San Francisco over the years.
So when Swift came out, like it had like a nice and powerful asynchronous library, which was Grantsville Dispatch, right? Like from day one, there was you could do easily stuff. But like Grantsville Dispatch was designed or like it was well suited for Objective-C.
Yeah.
And it's basically a C interface that has been translated to Swift. So it wasn't really proprietary. So I'd say it wasn't really special.
So the NS operation was the sort of baby of Grand Central Dispatch, the sort of adding a UI on top of it, right? Or concept of a UI. Not a user interface, but like a easily accessible
abstraction. Yeah.
Kind
of. They all like all these asynchronous libraries, they just use the pthread C library, which powers like everything in there, and then like they're just different abstractions over it to make it like easier and easier to create threads and do concurrent work and so forth.
Yeah.
But like they all had the same shortcoming, which is specifically about NS operation and the thread API. Like you had to create a thread, manage it yourself, then merge it into the main thread and so forth. So like this is a lot of manual work. And like Grantsville Dispatch was, okay, now we just have like this one function that like spawns a new thread and you can organize them in queues. And that's pretty much it. But this kind of like was not optimal because of what we experienced, like thread explosion. It was difficult to manage the amount of threads that are being created and so forth. So it was like super automatic, but in the way it turned out, like it's not fine-grained enough to like do exactly what you wanted. And so the new Swift concurrency APIs are trying to solve like most.
This is async await specifically, or combine in general?
No, async await. Like combine is just an abstraction over GCD, right? Like it's just And so the new stuff is trying to replace GCD, like to move the old asynchronous like foundation, so to say.
Yeah,
like have a new one that. That does things instead of GCD. And so the new model is it doesn't create threads. So the biggest difference is that it doesn't try to create threads on demand as GCD used to do.
Right.
And then, you know, organize blocks on these thread into the queues that you had to manage. So the new model has something called a cooperative thread pool. Mm-hmm. In which it will create threads automatically for you completely transparently. And then it will manage this pool to have up to the maximum amount of threads for your system. So you will never have more threads than cores, and therefore you will never have to switch between threads. You know, it kind of like works if I need to like very simplified example, like imagine the UI table view. You know how you pre-create, like preheat, like as many cells in the table view as can fit on screen, and then you just like replace them real quickly whenever you're scrolling.
Yeah, the recycle, yeah, so, reusable view or whatever it is. Yeah,
exactly. So like it kind of like works the same way. Like you have this pool of kind of like created threads, and then you just, as you need more tasks to run concurrently, you reuse these existing threads in the pool to run your tasks. So you never have to create threads and things like this, which is kind of like slow,
yeah,
and expensive.
It's funny. It's funny. The part I forget is that, you know, you can only have as many threads as you have cores. Now, is that CPU cores or like in the case of, I'm thinking, you know, with this new M1 Pro and M1 Max that just got rolled out, you know, you can configure with, you know, any number of, I think you have 10 and 12 cores in the two main chips, and then you have so many GPUs. So is it, this is just CPU cores?
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, you can have as many threads as you want. The problem is
you can only run that many at a time.
Yeah, right. So switching between the threads is apparently what takes like most of the time. So if you have like a whole bunch of concurrent things that are running and you have to mm-hmm. switch all the time, this potentially can slow down your app like considerably. From what I understand from WWDC and from what I've seen in instruments, the new model, like this is one of the big things that it does, is that it completely manages the threads for you in a way that you don't need to do switching between threads. They just have threads there. They're ready to go, basically. And so you just add basically function calls on these threads that execute like parts of work for you. And so every time you say await this or await that, that's called a suspension point. And like this allows the neural brain of the whole thing to like swap tasks between threads and like decides which task should run next and so forth and so forth. I can't say that I like completely understood the whole thing, even though like I've been looking into this exclusively this almost whole summer.
Yeah.
But I did a lot of like basically experiments in instruments. And from what I've seen, like this is what the system does. Basically decide, okay, this app gets this many threads, this app gets this many threads, and so forth and so forth. And it looks like it works pretty neatly, I must say. I think at the point of usage is extremely simple. If you're designing APIs that are highly concurrent, it's not so super simple, mm-hmm. but like, I like the separation. Like if you're designing a highly concurrent API, naturally you have to understand how this whole thing works. Or you better understand how this whole thing works.
Right.
And like, if you don't really need to understand how the whole thing works, you can still use them like completely and obliviously like of what's happening at a point of usage, right? But like, stop me whenever you feel like it's too much, because I'm
really I know from the conversations I follow online and my own, you know, confusion about it. Here's an example. Like, for instance, when I'm interviewing people, and this is a pro tip for anybody who gets interviewed by me, is I will get around to asking you what the difference between NS operations and GCD is. And I want to see who understands which came first, which is the chicken, which is the egg, you know, or what have you. And you've actually told me more. I've learned more from you in the last 5 minutes than you know, I do myself. And that's after writing and reading, you know, stuff for Ray for all these many years, right? Yeah, it sounds to me like, if I can just try and put an analogy around it, it's and I think I did say this in one of our podcast titles, it sounds like the arc for threads, like async await. Like it sounds like it, like you said, I didn't realize it's a different sort of rewrite or a rethink of Grand Central Dispatch. But and I remember when Grand Central Dispatch came out on iOS anyway, Leopard, I think, or Tiger, Leopard, maybe.
Yeah. I had to go to the store and buy the DVD like in a physical copy to like install it on my Mac to do iPhone. Oh,
back in the day, you mean? Back in the day? Or?
Yeah, oh, back yeah? in the day.
Wow. Huh. Yeah, for sure.
Sorry, I cut you through.
No, that's okay. That's okay. It's okay. Yeah, because this is, you know, I also go on tangents too. So it's, I think we're both equally guilty of that. But what I was going was it's I just remember what the title was that I said. I even tweeted it out and got a little bit of responses from it. Yeah, I think I'm just going to look at maybe look it up on the website, because we did talk about it on the show, obviously, when it came out. And I'm sure that people are yelling at their phone saying it was this episode, but or that episode. Let me go to the site here. Anyway, yeah. So it sounds like it's because, I mean, to me, it sounded like to me someone, you know, I don't work with Threads all the time, right? I work with them, you know, as I need them. You know, I'm one of these people who constantly blows up my app because I forget to bring a thread that's, you know, updating the UI to the front and to the main thread, you know, kind of thing. And that sounds to me like, there's a bit of a promise there that with async await, that kind of, you know, forgetting to do that is going to go away because it's kind of an automatic pull, if you will, right? Like you said, right?
Yeah, yeah. I would say that, you know, that now that Swift is in its what is it, seventh iteration or so, I can't really, yeah.
Well, 2014, so yeah, we're
2021, yeah, right.
That's 5. Something to, now.
Yeah, right? It's 5.5 now. Yeah. So whatever. It's. I think Apple has had enough years of experience and input on Swift development to know the kind of problems that people have with it in concurrent context. So this API design is trying to address concrete problems that have been appearing again and again and again. And I think that at least a few of them are solved pretty solidly. There's things that I'm still discovering that I'm just like in awe about them. Yeah. Just an example, like for something but you said specifically about this, you can annotate types or functions or properties with an actor, and then an actor is kind of like an actor is a type which is powered by an executor and is similar to what dispatch queues used to be. So it just executes serially code in a context. And so, but regardless of this, you can say, hey, this whole type, any function and any property in this type, let it run on the main thread from whatever it's being called. Mm-hmm. Or maybe if the type has many properties or many functions, you can say, hey, these three properties, an array of something and maybe a dictionary of something else and so forth, these things are driving my UI. So I want these three things to be updated on the main thread. And then you just like add an annotation at main actor before the property declaration.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you could name them. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So if you put at main actor in front of this function and maybe this property, these things are automatically being routed on the main thread for you anytime you call them from anywhere. So, you know, things like this, you know, they pre-solve problems that you will have at a point. In a way,
so do you need to name them that, or will it automatically, will it sort of help you or make a suggestion that perhaps you should do this? Main actor kind of thing.
So far, what I've seen is that I will have, or at least this has happened like a bunch of times to me so far, is that I will have a model, and then I will have like a list of some JSON objects that I'm fetching from network. And then these things, I'm showing them in Swift UI list on screen. And then everything in my views is driven by Swift UI. So this is automatically being run on the main thread. But like my model is not automatically being run on the main thread because, you know, network calls and so forth and so forth. And then when I'm running the app, I usually have the checkbox that says, I don't know what is being called, main thread checker, main thread something.
Oh, thread checker or whatever. Yeah, that new thing they added, the Xcode thing.
Yeah, there is a checkbox in your schema.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That tells you if you're trying to update
the checker or something like that. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. We'll put it in the fact check notes.
Okay. So I'll run my app and then Xcode shows me this purple warning, which is not a compile.
Yes, right. Yeah, exactly.
It just shows you the purple one and says, hey, you updated this property and this went to the main thread from a background thread. So, you know, it's wrong. And so
you're running the thread analyzer at this point, right?
No, it's not a thread analyzer. if I just quickly spawn Xcode, I'll tell you. So because if people are listening, they'll be like, I know what it is.
Yeah,
or if,
throwing
or things they don't the know, and, yeah. they don't know, they'll be like, what is it?
Yes, exactly.
So,
hurry up and tell me. I'd open Xcode right now, but it messes with my recording. So,
Mine is running extremely slow because of some. If I go to edit scheme in my run configuration and options, no, in diagnostics. Okay,
diagnostics. Yeah.
Edit scheme, run diagnostics. There is a runtime API checking, and there is a checkbox called main thread checker.
Main thread checker. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. And this is by default checked. So when you try to update the UI from somewhere, from another thread than the main thread, you get this purple warnings. And so I will see a purple warning and say, okay, so this property is driving my UI and my views.
Right.
I want to safeify this one property where I store the array of models, for example. And so I'll put like add main actor on this property, specifically in my model type.
Yeah.
And so, you know, other functions or whatever can be on background threads, can do whatever they want. But as soon as I update this one property, the update will be routed on the main thread, and that will safely drive my UI and my views.
Right.
And so things like this, just automating things for your sanity.
Well, and for those developers who are driving at home right now, the you generally write your model and your data types and your data network calls in an actual real Swift file, not necessarily a Swift UI file, right? Like, are you using sort of an MVVM model in your coding these days?
Yeah. I usually, when I started doing reactive programming some years ago, I went into MVVM and I really liked it. And so with Swift UI, I usually just have the views and another type, which is an observable object, to fit well with my views. And so since the model does networking and other things, sometimes code ends up elsewhere than the main thread.
So is that from your time at Realm where you were talking about that kind of
experience? I think so. I think 2000.
I remember you did a talk at 360i Dev on I think you did a reactive book for Ray as well, right? So
yeah. So I did start with ArcSwift. Yeah. Combine came out, and then now we have async await. So I feel like things are improving at a cadence that I really like it. Mm-hmm. Although I can imagine that I think for people that are just starting, it might be like too quickly. If somebody just started like in 2016 with ArcSwift, like the next year came Combine, now comes the Sync Await, so it might be a little bit overwhelming, I imagine.
That's sort of the nature of being a developer. It's like, I've been around since 2010 on iOS, and I remember manual memory management. In fact, I tell people I still have apps on the store that have manual memory. I never went back and rewrote them for Arc, right? Why? It works, right? But the thing about it is that the question I have out of what you just said is it do you think it's important for people to understand the history of this stuff? You and I are both have an art background, so we know the value of art history and looking at why they put the paint on the painting this way. But is it important for people to understand the history of how we had GCD, we had NS operations, we went to Combine, because people I see threads on Twitter saying, oh, Combine's gone, right? Which I don't think it is, right? And no, I don't, because obviously
me
you don't
either.
No. Yeah. But an async await is sort of the future, but Apple does this a lot. They take a problem we have and they create a tool for us in a framework or something that does something we don't know we need to do until we need to do it, and they roll it out. And it's super sexy, they'll put it on stage at WWDC, and especially in the platform, the State of the Union, platform State of the Union call a talk, right? So. Because this year was async await. In fact, like, I found my node on WWDC, and I basically said it's like Arc for threading. Is what the title of the show was,
Yeah, that's a very neat thing to say. Yeah.
Yeah, because I ask the younglings who come to me for job interviews. I'll ask them if they understand how memory management works in iOS, right? And they're like, yeah, you just Arc does it for you. You don't worry about it. I'm like, well, you do worry about it. You know, and the older developers I talk to always know, they know the history of, you know, retain and release and, you know, the Alloc and all those things we used to have to do back in the old days. But that's what I mean. Like, so the question is, do you think it's necessary for people to understand the path that you and I have been on in order to appreciate or understand things like async await, or just revel in the fact that they don't have to worry about the problems we did?
To be honest, I'm not so sure what to tell you here, because yeah. I've been reflecting on this a lot, in especially in the last, I don't know, half a year or so. Mm-hmm. Because I'm every day on Twitter and I read a lot about what people say. Mm-hmm. And you can't really generalize what people say, of course. But I've noticed that every now and again, there's again and again somebody who's saying, "Hey, like I never had the need to write a binary tree, or I never had the need to, I don't know, sort." Or I don't know.
The linked list nonsense, stuff like that.
Exactly.
I always kind of like, I dread getting that in an interview myself, you know?
Right. Yeah. and I think this is, I think it's a fair thing to say, like people that are like a few years in the industry have never needed to do this because they worked on problems that don't really require this. Of course. So, you know, like for them, it might feel unnecessary to know how to write a linked list or a double linked list or, you know, any of this data structures because like Swift is such a nice language that like it offers like the base for free in a way that you never have to think about it. Mm-hmm. Like it does this wonderful memory management, copy on write and so forth. So, like you never really hit like a bottleneck in performance when you usually start thinking about these like custom data structures that you might need to use to like gain back a performance that that you lost basically for using only the basics and so forth. So, and I think that they're right in their like they're right in their own use case and in their own environment. And so if somebody can do for years as an iOS developer without ever needing to write a linked list, I think they're right. I need to read linked lists like all the time. I do this again and again and again. And because I have the feeling that I'm just solving different problems. Like, of course, like I'm right for myself. And so I'm not so sure if I should be telling somebody that they need to know about like linked lists and, mm-hmm. and sorting trees and so forth, because we have different use cases. And right. so given that, I think that, well, maybe it's not necessary to know about memory management. And I think that as soon as you kind of like feel the need to know about it, mm-hmm. you know, then you'll learn about it and then you will know it and so forth. So
that's true. Sure. I mean, that's a lot of think? The, like I'm a self-taught iOS developer and the, I basically learned things as I needed to learn them. I mean, I had the benefit of working with Ray because then we had access to all the cool stuff that, you know, the other team members write, and you get to just go and play with it and, you know, forget it 10 minutes later. But still, you know, like I'll be honest with you, I started working on the Combine book and then the update you just did. I don't think I ever really looked at the previous one. And then, you know, I think I got like through halfway through the first chapter and I looked at it again this week, but I haven't really gone back and dug in again, you know, but I will sometime. But like I said, I do remember quite vividly your talk at 360. And then of course, you know, the work you were doing at Realm, because I went to the open house in San Francisco, you know?
Okay. You were in SF.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark but and I went
was
to that.
Was that the one with, what was it?
The famous cigarette exploding.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah, right. Right.
Yeah. The battery and the cheap knockoff e-cigarette blew up and we all almost died of cancer. No offense, Realm people.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that was a pretty interesting evening. It was actually right behind behind me. There was a lady was sitting behind me and Mark and her purse, literally the bottom started flaming.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. It was, and then it was just, you know, smoke bomb. Right.
At this time, I would have bet on the Galaxy 7, the one that they.
It was around that time, actually. Yeah,
it was. True. Yeah. Every time you went on a plane, they would say, "Hey, if you have this and this device."
Yeah. Well, I got on a flight once where they said, if you have any kind of iPhone or Samsung, and I'm like, no, iPhone doesn't blow up. You know, they made us turn our phones off on the plane, like not shut them, not turn off Wi-Fi. They made us turn the phone off.
Okay. You know? Yeah. I mean,
who are you going to call anyway? And you're, 5,000 feet in the air. Crazy. Yeah. Unless you want to watch Star Wars or something. Right. Yeah, cool. I'm curious about what you think about the Apple Silicon stuff. I mean, especially since we just this week, we finally got the promised next iteration for the pro users. Right.
Right.
What do you think about all that stuff?
I think it's amazing. I think it's like, I have no objections whatsoever. I think this is, it feels like such a huge leap forward for Apple computers, devices rather. It's just super crazy. I worked with a MacBook Pro with an M1, I think for over a year or so. And like switching back to my 15-inch Intel right now, it just feels subpar. I got so used to, like, for the machine to never make any sounds. Like, it really bothers
me. No fan.
I never had it. The only ever time that it turned the fans on, and I'm serious, I thought it doesn't have any fans, you know, because it was 13. Yeah, because
the 13-inch does. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so, but I thought, like, it's the small one. It doesn't have fans. That's why it never makes any sounds. But like one time I forgot it, like in the sun. And then after a while it turned on the fans. And it was like really like summertime and so forth. So, and then like, it was the first time I was really startled. Like, what is it?
I had the DTK on my desk, the Mac Mini DTK developer toolkit that they came up with last year. And I had it sitting on my desk, and every now and then I would feel this heat wave. I'm like, 'cause it had a fan on the back. But I have the MacBook Air, and it doesn't have fans, and it gets a little warm when it's charging, but it never gets hot. Not like my Intel's. My Intel, used to burn my leg. They were so hot, right?
Yeah, every now and again it would do that.
Yeah. So I'm curious though, are you personally in the market for a new computer? What were you thinking about it? Because you said you have a 2015 now, right? So no more touch bar.
So I think this one is, so I had a bunch of laptops, but right now I'm down to one, and this one is a 2018.
Oh, okay. Right.
Right. So, and this was like top of the line. So I think it's still like a viable computer. I think that I'm going to just wait a few months, see how 2021 wraps up financially. If things are looking good, I'm definitely going to get one of the new machines for sure.
Yeah. Any idea which one you would get? Would you go with a 16, or because you were going from 15?
I think I need to go to the store and like see how big they are.
Well, I can tell you, I had a 16 and a 15 in my hand, because I do a lot of the setups for the company I work for. And so I actually had one of the first guys who got a 16 had to come to my porch, and we had to do the onboarding because he had to connect to our company network, right? And because, I was one of the few people who sort of figured it out. But so I put the 15 and the 16 on top of each other. And it's just marginally, like maybe an eighth of an inch larger all around. It's because the bezel is moved back. You get it. The footprint of the computer is very relatively the same as the 2018 you're looking at now. Mm-hmm. But it's just a slightly larger screen, so for all intents and purposes, it looks the same. And I suspect the 14 is very similar. In fact, I have a 2013 MacBook Air my wife uses upstairs. It's much bigger than both of my Pro 13 and my new MacBook Air M1. From a footprint point of view, and again, it's another half an inch all the way all around if you put them on top of each other. So I think even though it's a 14 inch or 16 inch, it's probably physically the same size as what you have now. Give or take a little bit of
I must say that I'm really undecided. Like the the 13 inch is just the form factor is simply amazing, and I just love like holding it, like carrying it around in the apartment and so forth. I just love it. However, I'm now playing with like macOS, and they're like for development, so you just need a little more space on screen. So So I think it's going to be the 16 when I come around to getting a new one. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. We talked about it on the show which just came out on the weekend, and actually yesterday, in fact. I'm always going to be a smaller Mac guy, so I'm going to, if I get one, it'll give you a 14. But I recently put, when Monterey shipped on Monday, Monterey Art, the release candidate, I put it on my M1 Air, and it's super nice. I didn't run the beta on it, but and I bought it for the purpose of, you know, I got my daytime Mac, which is the Intel, and then I've got my not so much daytime Mac, but neither one of them are my daytime Mac, because like you, I'm doing most of my work on a corporate Mac. So I don't need a Mac per se at this point in time, because my company supplies me with one, right? So,
but hey, actually, regarding your note in there, I'm actually an employee right now. Like I'm on a break.
You're doing that. What do we call that? Jaime had a term for it where you don't.
Well, it's not a sabbatical per se.
Yeah, no, he had a developer term for like. Not like happily unemployed, happily, you know, like
a fun employment.
Fun employment. That's the one. Yeah, you're fun employed.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, writing a book is. I mean, it's not really being unemployed.
No, that's quite a lot of work. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, it's something that I'm doing like on my own here. Of course, with the larger team at rearwindling.com, but I mean, it's just sitting at home and banging.
Is it an 8-hour day for you? Like, do you have that kind of discipline, or you just chisel away at it when you feel like when the baby goes to sleep?
Well, first, she's not a baby anymore, and it's really it's a bit weird.
Do that if you feed them. To be honest,
but no, I think at a point where I was actively writing, that was it's pretty much an 8-hour day. But right now we're, I think, done. We are just running the last round of edits on the last chapter. And so I think the book should be out within. So
is this an exclusive, you know, spilling the beans, what's coming from Ray kind of deal, or do people know, has it been announced that this book is coming, or?
I think it's clear that it's coming in the beginning of next month. And we've been open to like working through the last rounds of edits, and I've been posting on Twitter about it. It's quite soon, and we're gonna just put it out as soon as we can. We don't have any issues currently. We're just one after another, just checking off tasks, final edits, bios, things like this. Yeah,
I can't await to sink in.
great
story.
Great. Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah,
it just came to me. So yeah, you were really excited too about this conversation we're having today, because you mentioned that you're happy about the fact that Doxy has been open sourced, right?
Right. Yeah. This was great. This was a very fantastic thing to happen to me, so to say. But like, right. So to give a little bit more context, of course. So at WWDC, Apple announced Doxy in Xcode, which is a system working within Xcode where you can write your package, framework library, add comments and add additional documentation content. And then just click build documentation in the build menu, in the product menu. And then that kind of like grabs all the comments, all the links, all the content, all your articles or interactive tutorials and so forth, and like compiles the documentation, and you can see it in the documentation viewer, just like any other framework from Apple. And that gives you, you know, quick help. You know, basically your own documentation behaves as any framework in the built-in docs.
Yeah, no, I know that our team has looked at that in the past, where you know you can add comments to exist before Doxy came out. You could add comments to your, I think, with the three forward slashes or three slashes.
Yes. Yeah.
They're not backslashes. They're just slashes, right? yeah. Unix. People call them backslash, but there is no backslash. It's a forward slash, a backslash. Yeah. Or maybe, I don't know. It's one of those two. We'll fact check that too. But you put that in and then you put a comment in and that would sort of populate the quick help in the previous to Doxy coming up. But so is this specifically for like a Swift package, like Swift package manager package kind of thing? Or is this part of any Swift app you've written?
I don't think it currently works for like iOS apps per se. Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
If you were writing like an API, like imagine you're at a company like Realm or something and you had a Swift package like that
people took
and so, like they could put it into their app and they could take advantage of your API to connect to whatever you're helping them do, that's the documentation piece that's going to get written by Doxy, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not completely sure what's the difference in there, but like if you see, like if you open the README of Doxy, and there's described like how the whole thing works. Basically, the Swift compiler produces a thing called the symbol graph, mm-hmm. which is a graph that describes like the hierarchy of your module. Basically, the Swift compiler takes a module and then describes it completely, all your types, all your functions and properties. They're like in this tree-like structure. Mm-hmm. And then the compiler also extracts like all of the documentation comments and like bakes them into that graph. Mm-hmm. And then what Doxy does is take this graph, mix it up with any additional content that you have written yourself, and then like produce this documentation structure that you can then see as pages in the doc viewer, basically.
And it's very similar to the kind of documentation structure you see from Apple today, like those sort of nice looking formatted web pages, right?
Yeah. If you open the README of Doxy, the first paragraph says, to see Doxy in action, open developer.apple.com/documentation. So Doxy actually produces that documentation as well.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes. It was they're dog fooding their own app, right? Now they're putting it out there.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
But are you excited about the fact that it's been open source now, that now the community can contribute it to it? Is that
I am. So there's a few related projects. Swift Doxy, which is the compiler. There's the Swift Doxy render, which is the view part of it, basically what you see, what actually renders things on screen and in the browser. There's the Swift Markdown package, which is Apple's own Markdown parser package. There's the Swift Symbol Kit package that helps you work with the symbol graphs that the compiler produces. So all of these are related, and all of these are used by Doxy, and I kind of like contributed to all of them. And first of all, seeing that work go out there and be available for everyone is really exciting, because I know like a lot of work went into them and they're well tested, they're like well designed, well thought through. So mm-hmm. it's really exciting that these are available for people to use. But also it's exciting for me because I also got co-author credit, so to say. So I'm a contributor in the repos, and I'm like in the first commit in the repos.
Oh, cool! Well. Yeah.
So, like personally for me, like this is a
feather in your cap. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly, that I never kind of like dreamed of previously. So this is pretty cool. You know, like most people work in Apple for a really long time, and like you never know what they did. But like things just turn out like this way that I can say, hey, by the way, here's the repo and here's the here's
my credit. And that's going to be there as long as GitHub is a thing, right? Kind of deal, right?
Yeah, it's the first commit. Like I better bookmark them, because I know that like going back through the repo history, especially in the web interface, is not very efficient. But
I wonder if the Internet Archive, you know, the Wayback mm-hmm. Machine. I wonder if it archives GitHub pages. I know it does for websites, but because GitHub's kind of a dynamically generated environment, right?
I think so, yeah. I wouldn't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's be something. Yeah, definitely take a screenshot. That's what I would do.
At the very least, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the one or two times that I had apps featured on the App Store, I made sure I took screenshots, so I've got them for posterity, you know? or lower resolution format. So as I was telling you at the beginning here, just like Roundabout Creative Chaos, I'm stealing this idea of asking random questions.
Okay.
And unlike Tammy, I've actually gone back to Marcel Proust, which is the source for this thing, to find the questions he used to ask. So if you're seated comfortably, you look like you are, we can start asking you some of these questions.
All right, let's go. Let's go. Right.
So the first one is, what is your motto?
A motto?
Yeah.
All right. Are you supposed to to have one instantly available?
Well, it depends on, I guess it depends on whether you've actually gone down that route to sort of think about what is your purpose, you know, in how you see yourself contributing to the world and the life. And I mean, you're a dad and you're all that kind of stuff, right? I did an entrepreneurial course once and what we call unique ability was I like to create and provide thoughtful solutions for people to help them embrace change.
Okay, I see.
So that's kind of my motto.
Wow. Okay.
I also like to say I put buttons on iPhones when people ask me what I do. That they can understand, right?
yeah, definitely. I'm not so sure. I don't think I'm prepared on this one. It's, as you said, I'm recently a dad, and a lot of things have changed, in a big way for me. So I kind of I think right now I'm a little lost.
Yeah.
I don't have this clear direction where I go with like all my force. I think right now I'm just, especially after wrapping up my work at Apple. I think I'm just relaxing right now. And I'm not quite sure what the vector is.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. How about this one? Who are your heroes in real life?
Oh, I see. Okay. This is something that I'm kind of more prepared to talk about.
Okay.
So I know this is maybe a little corny, but I think one of my bright examples is actually Ray Wendland. I think he's fantastic. We've been friends for a long time. We've been visiting each other and so forth. But I think is, I can't say that I know everything that's happening is in his head. I don't think anyone, maybe Vicky knows only, but regardless. Mm-hmm. I think at the same point we were just starting on iPhone development, and we've both had blogs and so forth. And I think at the point we had probably about the same amount of people reading our blogs and so forth. But he had such a clear vision of where he wanna be at a point that he just kept growing, and now 10 years later, he has this an amazing business. It has vision, it has readership, that has changed countless amounts of lives and so forth.
Of course, yeah.
I think he's one of these examples that I'm completely in awe. I can't do what he's doing, but he's really, I wish there was more people that create businesses that create real value for such a big amount of people.
Well, ultimately, he's the reason you and I are even talking today, because you were one of the first writers on the blog, which people may not know.
You talked
about that at 360, or you talked about that at the first RW DevCon. I think you did the keynote there, right? I don't know if that's online anywhere, but that's pretty cool. And then, I think for me, it was the same sort of thing. I mean, I came into iOS development in a cloud. I had a task to do, a job to perform, and I stumbled across this blog by this guy named Ray, I remember how primitive it looked in the day compared to where it is today, and I must go there once or twice a week just to see what's going on, what's new and what's shiny and stuff. Yeah, so definitely he's been a key in both of our professional careers anyway. And I think part of that is it sets the tone for the great community that iOS developers are in, right? I hear this all the time from other people that, it's the greatest environment to be in because we're all respectful and helpful and of each other, right?
Yeah, I think that because I don't think that many people know, but the website is all the contributors, or most of the contributors are people who just do this part-time, mm-hmm. just have a proper full-time job, or You know, they're like their own thing, but like every now and again, they'll just jump in, write something with like a bunch of other people that will help them around, like with editors and tech editors and so forth and so forth. And so like it's this shared experience that you're continuously part of, like without completely overtaking your life. So it's like both open and flexible, and it encourages contributing and cooperation. So and like this really is basically, it all stems from like the way like the raid started it, you know, like it's I think it's just I'm probably too much into the whole thing, but I really feel like it's been very special, special thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, and just as a parting thought on that point, we should mention that, you know, if you're out there and you are knowledgeable, and you don't have to be an expert, if you're knowledgeable about Flutter or Android or iOS or macOS, definitely just reach out to the team. We're always looking for people to contribute and help, either as a writer or tech editor kind of thing, right? So, and you know, who knows, this may be a part of your new career. Like it's helped me and Marin both in our professional and, you know, spiritual careers, I guess, right?
All right. I'm guessing everybody on the team,
and there's a huge community of us, you know, that continue to this day to collaborate on either just on Twitter or as some direct messages. You know, there's always someone on the team you can reach out to, that's the part I love about the whole community at Ray Wonder Lake. Cool. I have two questions here. I don't know which one to go to. I'm gonna go with this one. Who are your favorite writers?
Okay.
I assume you read books and things and movies.
In all honesty, I don't read as much, but I've been on Audible since about 2013 or so, and like, and that, like Audible has the subscription plan, which you get like credits, which is basically each credit is a book and so forth. So since 2013, I've been, I think, listening to at least one book every month, and this has been like quite the adventure, to be honest, because it allows you to both experience books and not like build up this massive amount of paper at home.
I have boxes. Boxes are, most of them are books. And there's books behind me, and
right. And I've been moving quite often, like every few years. So this like really is not an option for me.
Right.
So like one of my favorite authors is Stephen King.
Mm.
Yeah, this is surprisingly so, because when I was a teenager, I really liked his like early stuff about vampires and witches and things like that. They were like, rereading right now, they really seem very primitive in like both writing style and plots, and you know, they're just very basic. They're mostly basically scare tales. But like at this time when he became famous, he was doing a lot of drugs, abusing alcohol and so forth. So you can see like how it just like the quality also diminishes in the 90s or so. But currently he's writing like very strong prose, and so his new things like post 2010, let's say, I really enjoy them. There's one book in particular about the Kennedy assassination, in which somebody from present time goes back in time to the 60s to try to investigate who was it and so forth and so forth. It's very interesting, very well written. So I read a bunch of these books right now, or listened to. I really enjoyed
them. I think listening to audiobooks counts as reading.
I would imagine.
You're in the same headspace. I mean, you're just the difference. I mean, like since my eyes have been diminishing over the years, I find it less enjoyable to read because of the task, right? But so I switch to audiobooks, and I can walk my dog and listen to an audiobook at the same time. So yeah, I'm the same way. I've let my subscription go. I don't read. I'm doing air quotes. I don't read audiobooks as often as I used to, but I haven't missed not having the subscription, but yeah, you're right, Audible is a great service. I actually, through my Toronto library, I can download audiobooks, which is what I've switched to. The only difference is, like, you know, with Audible, you can get the book today. With the library, they're allowed to have so many digital copies in circulation. So you have to wait. Put yourself on a waiting list, and then, you know, you get, the Obama book is ready. I'm actually rereading Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance right now through an audiobook. So it's been, okay, I read that in university, and I'm coming back to it. still very relevant book. Cool. What is your most treasured possession?
Okay. This is a fun thing because actually I've been on a happy hour with Ray Wendlick and some of the team. I think,
oh, they last stole my month. Question, did they?
and there was a question like this. We were together on this one, I think.
Oh, okay, maybe.
Or I know I'm thinking about I was happy hour there. We met in one of the breakout rooms. And so regardless, I think currently I don't own it per se. But it is in my possession. Right. So I started doing calligraphy about 2 years ago.
Oh, yes. I saw your stuff on Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's really exciting because I've been going to a studio here where there's an artist. She studied in Japan, fine arts. And so she can do pretty much everything you can imagine, including pottery, calligraphy, painting on silk, watercolors. She can just grab anything that is in the room and like just do something beautiful. And so I was doing pottery with her for a while, this Japanese kind of like style of pottery. And then like I got a little bit tired after a year or so, and I was like, you can do everything, like show me something else. And maybe we can try the calligraphy. And so after I really started like going crazy about it, because it's so great for my headspace, she gave me her book from the Academy of Arts in Japan that she had when she studied back then. So it's a very fine book in which each chapter is its own separate little book. So, you know, it's so precious that when you want to read something, you just open it up, like it's like a little box. So you like open it up, take out the chapter you want, which is its own separate little book, and like leave the rest in the cabinet so that it doesn't get like print, like fingerprints and things like this. And also like each of these little chapters was like, so the chapters, they're just full of characters, you know, like they're by like the highly, highly recognized masters of calligraphy in Japan. Like each of them like has this like different style in its own chapter. So you look at them and like try to figure them out, like reproduce them and so forth. And like, I was, hey, why is this like every page, why is like made out of like two sheets of paper? Like what's with this? Like, is it like the Japanese style something? She's like, no, these are hand bound. So these are like printouts on a press that are just folded in the middle and like then bound in the, like in a book. That's why. So they're like, it's super precious. This is like something that I'm completely in love with to like have in my hand. So
this is, but it's in your teacher's possession right now, or?
No, this is here with me because I think at a point, as she said, like,
oh, that's what you mean by you don't own it. It's not something.
Yeah. So
it's on loan to you.
I have the textbook with me. Yeah. As long as there's no other students that are willing to start with calligraphy at the same time with her.
Sure.
Keep that for a while. Yeah. But like, as she said, like everybody just starts and then give up. So it's a very difficult thing to do or to like get started with.
So there's some of these questions are we sort of already covered, but so what do you consider to be your greatest achievement?
My greatest achievement? Well, I think I've been at least an okay dad so far. It is not easy. I mean,
no,
it's just,
as you only have one child right now.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Like I was talking to somebody like last week, actually Sandra, the editor on the Swift Concurrency book. I was telling it, right, like, so for our professional life and for our like academic life or whatever, like we prepare like for years and years, like you go to 12 years of school, then you get like to another 6 years of college, and then you get like into like internships, whatever. And then like after 25 years of preparation, like you start working or so. Like with kids is just, you know, catch and now do.
Yeah, it's you're thrown into the lake and you have to learn to swim. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
And all those things, all those fears you had of bodily fluids or, you have to put all that aside. Like they don't care like what your hangups are. Right.
Yeah. So I think that, I think this is one of the things that I've been doing good so far. So far, so good.
Cool. All right.
Yeah.
Moving on. Where would you most like to live? Besides Berlin.
Funny story. I already lived where I would most likely live. I think like the time that I spent in Barcelona was, kind of like, I really felt like home there. I really could connect to the people that I've met there. It's been like, I think climate wise and like very many things were precisely as I wanted them to be. So I really feel like this was like the place for me. And I was really happy there. Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Barcelona. My wife and I went there we were doing a pitch for the Olympics back in 91, I think. Right. Yeah, so we spent a week in Barcelona and got to see Sacra Familia and enjoy the dinner and meet some. Unfortunately, like, I should smack myself in the head because I didn't go see any Picasso museums when I was there. You know,
Picasso Museum.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff in there. Okay. Mind you, I did get to see the. I did go. We landed on the plane. We were exhausted. I said to my wife, "I want to see Sacra Familia." And we started walking from the hotel. It should be just down this road. Like, looking at the map, right? We didn't have an iPhone at the time to say, "Find a cab."
Yeah, the street goes for like 10 kilometers this way.
Yeah, exactly. And so we found, it's funny. It took us like maybe an hour and a half to walk to the place. We spent like maybe an hour in front of it, just walking around and looking at it. And it was still obviously still under construction. I think it's still under construction today, right?
Yeah.
And then we have a plan.
Yeah, they have a plan for another 90 years or so.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
It used to be the way they used to build cathedrals. It used to take almost, many generations to build them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It's really, really crazy when you consider they throw up a building in, downtown like now in like a year, right? Yeah. But, or faster, right? Crazy, yeah. All right. So, and here's some really weird questions, just some simple ones. Flat or sparkling water?
I think I'd go with sparkling.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. This is probably one of the very few ways that I've been Germanized.
Okay. Yeah. Is there any reason why? Is it just because the bottled water is cleaner or something, or just you like the flavor? And
I don't know. I think it I like it because, oftentimes you just feel like, I think we have this, what is it called? Like a Pavlov's reaction to like sparkling means soda and soda means sugar.
Oh, okay. Right.
Right. And so, and I found that like drinking sparkling water gives me a little bit of that feeling. So I don't really drink sodas much. Yeah.
Yeah. Same here. All right. What is the scariest animal?
Scariest animal? Weird question. I don't know. I think I've been very, very startled by like these very hairy spiders, if you know what I mean. Like, there's like this, like, what is it called? Like
tarantula?
In Peppa Pig, like there's like Mr. Skinny Legs and so on. It's like just one little ball with like few legs. So
the daddy long leg, they call it, I think. A little tiny body and big long, inch and a half long legs.
Yeah, so these ones I think are kind of like okay, but like there's this like spiders that have like real proper muscle,
yeah,
like mass on their legs, and they're like all hairy and stuff. Like, this is just crazy. I can't really do that.
Probably the same way. Yeah. Cool. And this last question I'm bringing back from the last podcast that Tammy and I did together. It started off as Star Trek or Star Wars, but I'm gonna add to it because we had a couple of guests who extended the question. So the question is now Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, or Babylon 5?
I see what you're doing there. I think I'd have to go with Voyager.
Okay.
Can I
we're calling it Voy now, by the way. It's called Voy now.
Okay.
I don't know if you watch the Lower Decks, the Star Trek Lower Decks, no. The new animated one. So they, the Lower Decks people, they're the starters of the show, and they call it Voy. I was on Voy, or I watched this. I heard about this on Voy. So
okay,
it's no longer Voyager. It's Voy.
Yeah. I think this is my favorite one. I like that there's a female captain, that she's strong. There's very many. It's Star Trek, so it's also kind of like a bit of a fantasy world and stuff. But like, there's also a lot of interesting, like very personal stories and things like this. This one I really like. I'm not so much into like car chases and like
cop shows.
Accordingly, like starship chases and stuff like this. So I really like this one.
Cool. You know, I don't know if you know Jean McDonald, but she does a podcast where she's talks about Voyager.
Oh, really?
And okay. She's actually done a web page where she's got the different episodes of Voyager. And for people who've never seen them before, she's got a very short synopsis of what the story is about and whether you should watch it or skip it.
I can see how this can be very useful.
And then the one of the controversial episodes that people sort of go on one side or the other is the Tuvix episode, where what's the name of the Vulcan guy? Neelix and the Tim Russ character. They end up in a transporter accident and they get merged into one being called Tuvix.
Okay. Oh.
And then the question is, you know, when they figure out how to unsolve this, are you know, they're going to go back to having Neelix and Tuvok is the name of the Vulcan.
Yeah, Tuvok. Yeah.
What happens to Tuvix? It's like Data. The question about Data, is Data a real, you know, sentient being or not, you know, or is he just a machine and can we take him apart and examine him, you know, or like, so the idea is what happens to this third entity that they've created in the transporter? Like he has to go away for Tuvix and sort of Neelix and Tuvok to have their life back. Right.
Yeah.
So interesting sort of pet, you know, that's very similar to the original Star Trek used to be, had these sort of questions that were basically, you know, one guy's or black on one side, white on the other side, and the other guy, but you know, can you see the difference? They're black and white on the opposite sides, you know.
Yeah,
they're not the same, you know.
And you know, the thing is that like for us right now, it looks like it's like almost like abstract questions that like are just there for our entertainment, but like one day could be like real problems. Exactly. Yeah. Like with like Tuvix, like if we do have the transporters,
yeah,
we're gonna have problems like this sooner or later.
Yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's like, you know, like there's they always play with this thing in the earlier versions of Star Trek where they have transporter accidents, you know, like somebody gets the transporter is not ready or it's malfunctioning and they end up, you know, killing people in the transporter. And that's a very similar kind of question that we have today with self-driving cars, right? You see, it's the, you know, the trolley test, you know, test. So it's like the trolley test, like, you know, what, neither one of them is the right way to go, but which one do you go? You know? And so in an accident involving a self-driving car, who was responsible? The person who was sitting in the car, the manufacturer of the car, or the software developer who wrote the code that determined whether to apply the brake or not, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Like, and like say at the time, Asimov or Philip K. Dick were writing their stories like 50 years ago or so, like even more now.
Yeah.
These kind of things seemed like abstract questions, like that are like written down in a story for our entertainment. But like right now, they're like becoming real. Electric cars are, and actually self-driving cars are going to be more and more like sooner or later a thing of our day to day. So.
Yeah, like I was saying before, it was The Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. I'm reading this book and. What's interesting is, you know, it's written in the 80s, I think, right? And no cell phone, right? No Google Maps, you know, no YouTube where, like, because he's talking about the whole art of do you need to enjoy a road trip on a motorcycle? Do you need to know a good mechanic or do you need to know how to fix the problems yourself as they come up, right? And that's one of the sort of debates early in the book. And I'm thinking, you know, like, people like, you know, people who've never dialed a telephone don't know the challenges you had, you know, if you didn't know the number,
yeah.
right? Or people weren't home to answer the call, right? Or you had to dial and go all the way around with a 9 and you made a mistake and you had to start over again and, you know, get that 9 again. All these problems that, you know, we don't have anymore now that we can say, hey, Siri, call. Oh, sorry, Siri. Don't answer me. It's funny, you know, I have a HomePod in front of my TV because I have an Apple TV and I use the HomePod as the speaker for the Apple TV. But when I'm watching regular television, somebody says something. Every now and then my HomePod will respond.
Mine does that too. Yeah, of course. I've been just watching like beginning to end 30 Rock.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
And one of the characters in The Office, she's called Siri.
Oh, right.
And the HomePod is like blinking like all the time here at my desk.
Nice.
But the thing is, you know, like it blinks, so it does recognize its name, but like ultimately decides like not to speak back. So
right,
like there's some kind of like process going on, and like at a point sees, well, this is not really a question, so I think I better just.
It's funny because I have a HomePod here in the basement. I bought the big ones, you know, when they announced that they weren't going to sell them anymore. I bought a refurbished one first, and I bought a second one because we had one in the kitchen. We put one in down here, bought a third one. And then my wife and I both have Apple watches, and she's constantly cooking. And now she uses, you know, the HomePod as a timer. Oh, yeah. So she'll say, hey, followed by the word Siri, set a timer for 10 minutes. And the thing is, like, you know, if you turn your wrist in a certain way, your Siri will pay attention to you. Right. So our Siri is confused as to which device we're talking to. It's very intelligent because it generally knows that like if you ask for it to play a radio station, it knows to do it on the HomePod because it's the most capable device for doing that, right? But it's obviously confused between, you know, mind you, now you can direct it and say play it everywhere, play it in the office, play it in the basement, you know, and as long as you're HomePod has a name, you know, it knows where to play it. Because often she'll say something to my HomePod in the kitchen, and the kitchen's just up the stairs right over here, right? And the one in the basement will respond to her, not the one upstairs.
Okay.
Which is,
I see.
What?
That's weird.
Yeah. All these interesting things. And, you know, it's funny when you think about it, like these are the edge cases that, you know, we as developers don't think about. We're writing a perfect happy path application, you know, and we don't consider, well, what if somebody has 12 HomePods in a row? And I've often wondered, I have a Google Home next to my HomePod and I have an Alexa upstairs. One of these days I want to try and get them to talk to each other and see where the conversation goes, right? They'll all say, I'm sorry, I can't do that.
No, I have the mini HomePod. And I find it like, I find we do have like two workrooms in the apartment, and one is my wife's workroom. Mm. And we had like each got like a mini for our desks, which is great because like you can easily play music on like from both ends of the apartment. Yes.
Yeah.
And like stay, like if you go to the kitchen, which is it kind of like in the middle, you have a like a surround like from everywhere.
Yes.
From
yes.
everywhere.
So yep. And it can, like, also follow you through the house too, which I've heard too.
Yeah. But I really find it like great to like pair them on the desk.
Oh, yes. Desk. Amazing that, sound, really, right?
Yeah. I'm really like, I find the big ones, like they sound great on their own. And these little ones on their own, I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sold on them. But like when you have the two in front of you, like on a like about a
stereo pair,
meter and a half, two meters away, then I really like it.
I took two of the big HomePods, put them in the kitchen when I first got them, and I made them a stereo pair. And then I played the new mix of the Beatles' Abbey Road. Amazing sound, phenomenal. You know, I only have one in front of my Apple TV now because it does map to the room, you know, so you get uses the walls to bounce, you know, sound and stuff like that, which all of our TVs do that these days anyway. But my wife told me today she wants a mini for upstairs so I can bring one of the other HomePods down here and have a stereo pair all the time, which will be just great.
Yeah. I didn't try to, like, do you know if like a mini pairs with a HomePod?
No, I don't think they do. No, you can't. Can't do that's one thing. I know you can pair two minis, you can pair two original HomePods, but yeah, I don't think you can. My concern about the HomePod, and was a little leery about buying these ones when they announced that they weren't going to have them anymore, is, you know, when the software goes away, you know, I have, my whole house is full of old, like old Mac stuff, so you can see them here and here. But, you know, like those guys, they don't understand HTTPS, so they can't connect to the internet anymore. I do have a solution for that, but so they don't understand the internet anymore. So I can't, you know, and the one, the SE30 doesn't have an Ethernet port. So it really doesn't, you know, it's an island, right?
Yeah.
So my concern is because we don't have an external port on the HomePods, that once, you know, Siri evolves beyond where it can run on there, what do these become, you know, landfill, you know? That said, I'm sure someone will figure out how to put an audio jack on them so you can use them as a nice speaker.
Yeah. You know, this was great about what was it called, the airport?
The base stations ones? Yeah.
Because it was both like a Wi-Fi router. You could like plug things that are USB in it, and then you could also plug like a speaker, and it became like wireless speaker.
Yeah, Airport Express, I think it's called. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it had the headphone, the microphone jack in the bottom.
Yeah. You could just plug in anything into it, and then became like wireless speaker.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that's the evolution of where HomePod comes from, right? So.
Right. Yeah.
It's cool. I'm a big fan of Apple TV. I take it you have Apple TV as well, and.
I have the device here. I think the first 4K was it? I don't know. I haven't used it in a while. We don't have a TV in here.
Okay.
In this apartment, we never had in this apartment. So it's been sitting like for a couple of years.
We have three of them because we're still bound to cable, and I'm trying to break my wife by having more Apple TVs available to her. I have the 4K down here, and I have the original Apple developer kit one, the $1, you know, when they first rolled out it. I have that one upstairs, and and now we have another entertainment space upstairs that we use. So the house is full of Apple devices, and I'm waiting for all the HomeKit stuff to connect because I have a Nest door cam because I'm in the basement right now, and I keep missing shipments because the guy comes to the door and he taps really quietly, you know?
Okay.
Now there's a doorbell he has to ring, and then the Google HomePod tells me there's someone at the door, you know?
Nice.
So that's nice. Yeah. So I have the Google stuff. I have the Alexa stuff. And I'm waiting for the day when they all speak the same language, you know?
I don't know.
I run Homebridge on my I have a mini server down behind me. I run Homebridge on it, and Homebridge lets your Google stuff talk to HomeKit.
See?
Yeah, so it's kind of cool.
Okay. I didn't really try all of these. Like I don't have so many devices. Like I am always afraid to buy more things because I moved so many times that I'm just very wary every time that buying anything. But this is one of the reasons actually that I'm trying to really stick to Apple products because they hold fairly long compared to other electronics that I have. Like I still have my blue 5C phone and it works just fine. It's just that it doesn't hold for so long. It's charged, but that's pretty much it.
I was playing with this the other day. This is my iPhone 3GS. It was dead for a while. Okay. There it is. But I just realized that it's working now all of a sudden. Here, let me. You don't want to see my password. You know. Yeah, so I used to keep this in the bathroom just so I could check the weather and things like that. You know. But nice.
Yeah, it's they're really. And here is the. Here on my desk, I have the 2017 iPad, which now my daughter uses actively.
Is that a Pro or regular?
No. Just run-of-the-mill, like.
Yeah, yeah.
And she uses it mostly for Netflix, so.
Yeah.
You know, but also uses like a bunch of apps and so forth, and it's just perfect. Like it works, it does everything, and it's surviving like. Really heavy use, like
yeah.
By
no,
heavy,
no.
I mean, like fist fights and stuff.
Well, I'm surprised that you don't. Like, we put my wife's iPad in one of those Griffin cases with the plastic. Yeah, it's got a plastic screen on the front, and it's you know, you can almost shoot a bullet at it and it would still survive, you know, and waterproof. Because when the grandkids were growing up, we you were always passing them a device in the back seat of the car. And, you know, like my original Apple, I have an iPhone 1 that I brought back from San Francisco to use because they weren't available in Canada, right?
Yeah.
But the kids broke the home button because they use it so much when they were playing games and stuff, right? So yeah. Yeah, and so, you know, we try to protect the devices, because, you know, I've seen some unfortunate accidents happen to some of these devices. Well, it's been great having you on the show. We should wrap up and then we can talk some more as well.
I think we went like a bit over time.
Well, there is no time. What is time? Time is relative, right? So hey, thanks for Martin for being on the show. If people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
Underplot.com. That's underplot as the word .com.
Cool. All right. And as usual, my name is Tim Mitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A on the Twitter machines where you'll find me. And then Mike is going to start doing the outro while Marin and I laugh and joke and say secret stuff.
Okay.
Bye.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fireside.fm. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends, leave a comment on the website, or write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC and we may mention you on the show. Friends of the show can also join us on the podcast Slack channel. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is @MTJC_podcast. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Every dollar pledged helps a lot. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
I'm still amazed that we both showed up with the t-shirts.
Pink Floyd, yeah.
Crazy.
Is yours a recent one or?
I don't know. It's just the Dark Side. And I bought it the last time I was in Cupertino. I bought it from what is it called? Target. I was just looking for some fun clothes for my daughter, and there was like a big pile of t-shirts of like rock bands. And okay, here it is.
Oh, this is at Target.
It was at Target, yeah.
Yeah, I bought a Star Wars one in Target. We were in Hawaii last 2019, and there was a nice Star Wars one I bought there. This one I got off the internet, off of Facebook. It's were here. I can only show you if you were here.
Yeah, yeah.
Which again was another seminal album for me too, right? So, because it came out when I was in grade 11, I think, grade 10, maybe. Yeah. So I used to listen to Dark Side of the Moon underneath my sister would play it in her bedroom, and I would sit by the door and listen to it.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So yeah, Dark Side is another one too. Do you ever get a chance to see Pink Floyd or?
No, I don't think so. No, I'm not really. I'm musically, I don't really feel very comfortable at like big crowds,
right?
So concerts have never really been like my thing much.
Your thing, yeah.
I've been to like a few, but quite comfortable. I'm more into this like live music, like at bars and things like this,
right?
Where there's smaller like a place, crowd, but like in 1 minute go outside, take a little bit of fresh air, and then come back in. Kind of like my thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And have you been in any nice art galleries recently? I guess not, right? But
I was actually. I was, huh? Yeah. I was.
Where'd you go?
I was 2 days in Vienna. Actually, it was 2 days in Prague, nice. And then 2 days in Vienna. It's from here to Prague is about 3 hours and a half drive. And then from Prague to Vienna is another three and a half or so. So I did go in summer, and I've seen there was a show of a very like a female Austrian artist who paints like amazing things about displaced women, super powerful. So I did see a few nice things, I must say. And I met Peter Steinberger in Vienna. You know, the PDF kit.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, cool.
Founder, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, he's in Vienna. And I just like wrote on Twitter and then we met up and was nice. It was nice, you know, like it was so good, like for a few days to just drive around, like meet a couple of people, feel a bit more normal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the cool thing about Europe. I mean, for me, Europe is a big adventure, right? To try and go over there and see stuff. I mean, I have to go to New York, or I have to go to, you know, to galleries here and around, wait for the shows to come to me, right? Like there's a Picasso Blue Period show at the Art Gallery of Ontario coming up. And my wife and I were talking, like, do we still have a membership? We don't know anymore, right? Like what happened in the pandemic, right? But, you know, and then, you know, I like to go to MoMA in New York City. Like I went to an Apple event in 2017, I think. And I landed, got off the plane, went to MoMA. I had an hour to run through the whole gallery and see all the pieces. Right. And then I felt like one of those people at the Louvre in Paris who run through from one place to the other. They don't sit there and enjoy the painting, right? So, yeah. But I kind of had to do that. And then they finally reopened the last time I was in San Francisco. They opened the gallery downtown. You know, we used to go to WWDC, and the gallery was always under construction.
Yeah,
SF MoMA, right? Mm-hmm. So I got to go in there last time I was in. There and then I went to a museum, and when we went to RWDevCon, there was a nice museum in DC that we went to. I don't know if you did you go to the last couple of WWDCs? I can't remember. I mean, not RWDC.
Yeah, I did go to 2018, I think it was.
Yeah, that was one, right?
I think it was the last. Yeah, that's true. It was the last one.
It's only been three. Yeah,
yeah, I've been to the last one. Right. So, yeah, it's really funny. Like now I'm just wrapping up with the book. I think next week should be really completely finished. And then the week after, if nothing goes wrong, I will go out.
Yeah.
And then I'm really excited, like, to not look for a job for a couple of months. And I've been obsessed with this idea to create like a Swift IDE. I think I'm going to give this a try. But like, I'm going to give you like the 1 minute pitch, and you just tell me yes, no, just like as a first reaction. So, so have you been in the situation where you're putting like all your effort into learning Swift and building iOS apps and Mac apps and so forth, and that works great with Xcode and so forth. But like, as soon as you need to do an automated task or to like do anything else, like, stitching some JSONs together, or like maybe processing some images, then you have to go to like a bash scripting, Ruby, and so forth and so forth.
Right, right.
So what I want to build is like an IDE that helps you write scripts in Swift really easily.
Oh, nice.
Like,
yeah,
as easy as opening a new file, writing the script, running, that's it.
So is this like the idea behind AppleScript kind of idea? I mean, like that's an example that like I got into this stuff through things like Final Cut Pro, or not Final Cut Pro, FileMaker Pro had a sort of a very simple, HyperCard was another example where you know, they put together the pieces and you would just put these pieces together and cut, and it would do a thing, right? So we used to use AppleScript in print production when I was working in prepress. And then, that led me to, you know, things like learning PHP and things like that, right? So, yeah, I often joke that there should be a Photoshop, like Adobe's going to come out with iOS Developer 1.0, you know, kind of app, iOS Creator, you know, and I trademarked the name Adobe, don't steal it from me. But, you know, they and this is kind of what I think Swift UI is in a sense, you know, like it's, you know, you don't need to know all the craziness that we had in Objective-C to basically build, build something, right? So Swift UI to me is kind of that same sort of idea. Yeah. So I think that, and you're right. Like if I need to do any kind of text processing or
anything, you know, like outside of iOS Developer, right?
Yeah, I would go write a script that run on, you know, awk or something like that. Or I think a lot of people are open to the idea of scripting, like. Server side, if you want to call it that. Not it's not hosting, it's running Swift on your Mac, right?
And the problem is that like you can do this with Xcode, but like the thing is you need to like create a new project, set up all the like the input parsing, output parsing, whatever, importing all the libraries and so forth and so forth. So I'm really thinking about something that like does all of this automatically for you. And the only thing you need to do is just like open a new file and say like read all the files in this directory. And if they're images, you know, like resize them or something like this, which is like the 10 lines of code that you actually want to write.
Right.
Yeah, not like all the setup, all the projects and so forth.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about like something like this, like just to transfer all your Swift skills that you have for iOS development into like something else you can do on your computer.
It's a similar idea. Like coming back to what I started with, like, and this is what I knew is like, you know, I started doing PHP because somebody had a hockey pool and they needed to, I said to them, why don't you do it on a computer? And they said, well, why don't you do it on the computer? And they handed me the list. Right. And I learned how to write PHP to create the pool, to display a table of information for people, and then to have then created something for them to select the teams that they're going to put together. And then I had to write a script that would go to Yahoo, scrape the fantasy pool information, convert it, strip it all out of HTML or whatever format it was in, and then insert it into a MySQL database. And then that's what generated the table that you looked at to see how your team was doing today, right?
Yeah.
And then I did a similar thing with I just forgotten what it was, but I had a similar kind of task that I had to do the same thing. And so it sounds like you're saying the stuff that I would have to go to other languages to do on my Mac, like use my Unix skills to do, you're talking about doing this now in Swift, which is a language that theoretically you already know, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Or want to learn. Yeah.
Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. So I'm really thinking about this and I'm trying to think about it like in a way that like how could it be like a sustainable product?
Cool. Yeah.
All right,
my friend.
This has been amazing. I love this so much.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.